This recording is a production of Anabaptist Financial. More recordings are available on our website at www.afweb.org under the Resources menu or by calling 800-653-9817. This presentation was recorded at a business seminar held on February 17, 2026 in Arthur, Illinois.
I'd like to greet you all in Jesus' name again this afternoon. And yeah, just thought it was a privilege already being here and seeing as many. I think I was thinking about different churches, thinking about God's kingdom. And so we all have that common goal, I think, of in our businesses that we relate to each other in a godly way, and so that the kingdom of God can be furthered. So today, as I look at the crowd, I think there's a lot of people represented here. We think about crucial conversations, and we think about how many of you have been in conversations you didn't know what to say? Maybe a raise of hands. I think just about everybody. So if we look at this morning, you might have looked at your workbook a little bit, and we thought of the question, who is that person sitting in your chair? That question has a big impact, and today I wanted to focus a lot upon us leaders. And so we as leaders are representing our crew, you're representing God's kingdom. And so who does it really matter? Does it matter, if we look at this here, does it matter who that person is sitting in your chair? And if I look at you guys and if I look at each person here sitting in that chair, when you get into a crucial conversation, does it matter who you are? You set the environment in your crew. You set the environment in your workplace or whatever you manage. The question is, does it matter? So would it matter if I would, in a church setting, if there's a problem in a church setting and they need somebody to go talk to that person, would they send you? And the question might be, why would they send you? And why wouldn't they? If there's a situation in church, would they send you? So I was thinking about, a lot of these things, I believe what I want to pound on is the difference it makes going into crucial conversations with the person that you actually are. The person that I am is going to make the difference. And so it's huge. And I would say I could say that a lot of battles are won or lost before they are fought. Am I making sense? A lot of battles are won or lost before they're fought. We think of Alexander the Great was a great conqueror, and he conquered the world, and he was dissatisfied with life because he had conquered the world, and he actually committed suicide. But there was something that he would always prepare. He had a different strategy than most anybody else did, and he had a prepper he prepared when he went into battle. And it'd be interesting sometimes look at that strategy and what he did. He had a different strategy. So we believe it makes a huge difference about that preparation. So we think about that, about preparation. We look at the screen again, and it says, no one plans to fail, but many have failed to plan. And a lot of that, I think David in the Bible said, he said this, Psalms, it says, thy word have I hidden my heart, that I might not sin against thee. What did he do? He hid something in his heart. He had the word of God in his heart so that he would not sin. And I think in the same way, if we're looking to be able to hide some of these things, applications, the ingredients, some things that we can maybe pull out and bring some practical applications. How can we do this? And I'd like to say, yeah, today I'd want to focus on the great responsibility laid on us as leaders' shoulders to live out the example. How to work through crucial conversations. And as we move forward a little bit, I'll have about three stories. And talking about grandpa, my dad, and the things myself, things that we learned. But what I want to bring out is the huge importance of what are you teaching as a leader, as all these leaders, what are you teaching others? Are you teaching them how to go through crucial conversations? Or what are they seeing? Maybe as dads, what are they looking at? I'm convinced that the church is built more in 6 days a week than on the seventh. And why do I say that? Because I believe the realm that we work at, the people that all of us that have that workforce out there, we're working out to the people that we see, the faces we see, there's a lot more impact in the way we relate to people. We use the kingdom of God. We use the Sermon on the Mount, loving others. When somebody does evil against us, we pray for them. I'm convinced. So again, does it make a difference, that person who is sitting in your chair? So I'd like to maybe go on. If we look at the next line, it says life is 10% of what happens and 90% of how we respond. Life is 10% of what happens and 90% how we respond. I can assure you, if you're a proud and selfish person, you will almost always fail in a crucial conversation. Maybe, surely, even with your wife. I can assure you, if we're a proud and selfish person, so the power, yeah, to plan ahead, to make sure that we know what does it take when we go into a crucial conversation. There's about three words. As we go on here, there's about three words that I would like you all to remember. And basically, those first three words up there are live to give. If we remember those three words, look at the opposite, or we live to take. And I want to say this, I remember there was a bishop once that he had a message, and I remember in his message, this is what he said. He said that when you make, and this gets pretty tough maybe on his Anabaptist people, but this is what he said. He said, when we make a deal, make sure when you make a deal that the other person gets a good deal. Do we get that? Live to give. So always remember when we're making a deal with someone. So we always kind of like to, I mean, I think it's Anabaptist people. We like to kind of brag on the deal that we got. We went to a sale. This is what we got. And you know, sometimes when you're bidding, that's different. But let's say it's a personal dealing with somebody else. Always remember that there's a person on the other end. And so remember that if you really got a deal, if you kind of cheated him and you feel good about it, that's actually not God's kingdom. That's not what God's looking for. He's looking, I think that makes the difference. If we are looking, we're talking that employee. And do we really like that employee? Do we actually want to give him something, or are we looking to take something from him? I think we could say, it's kind of like a unlike us conservative people, we're always looking to be thrifty, industrious, and successful. We have that drive naturally. We like to do that, but we kind of forget, and we have to be reminded what God wants for us. Jesus actually wants us to give. How much is enough? So how is it when we speak with that employee that's always damaging something? So he's always ruining something. Or what about that client that doesn't pay? Or we'd say he's slow to pay, but in the end actually doesn't pay. How do we actually look at that? Do we look at him with love, or we look at him that we just want it? So it'll make the difference when we go into that conversation. So is there a difference? There is a difference. Living to give or live to take. So if we're always trying to take away, you're going to lose out. We're going to lose out about that. Here's a verse that goes, all bear him witness and wondered at the gracious words which proceeded out of his mouth. And he said, is this not Joseph's son? This was Jesus' own word. This was Jesus here. And you know, the gracious words that came out of it. And I think we're trying to build core values and businesses that are foundational with Jesus Christ on the bottom. Well, I say the bottom. I'm talking about foundation. It is very foundational. And so that's what he did. Everywhere he went, he made a big impact. There were people healed, and he made an impact. That's what I like to focus on and having us as leaders, that we would have that focus, that we would make, a lot of it was brought out today about having other people, giving to other people and having them having a business that's actually enjoyable. We enjoy it with working each other. We have a teamwork, and we want to have those environments. We love to have those environments. We don't want to go to work and dread it. So I would say, if we look at this, love must be the motivating force of everyone wanting to practice crucial conversations in a Christ-like way. Have you ever tried, most of them are very familiar with Matthew 18. Have you ever tried Matthew 18 with no love? Did it work out? Using Matthew 18, and if you think somebody has wronged you, if you're going to that person and you're upset at him, the way you're going to relate to him, it's going to be a failure. It's definitely going to be a failure. But if we use Christ's way, love must be the motivating force of everyone wanting to practice crucial conversations in a Christ-like way. So I'd like to maybe, if we keep on going here, teaching by example. I want you all to look at this by teaching by example. So we're maybe in a conversation here today about generations. So we have one generation here, the next coming. There's probably maybe three generations here. And we look at the ages. So how are we going to pass these things on? And I know in my own life, as in business, I learned a lot of things from Grandpa. I learned a lot of things from Dad along the way. And you know, when it was my turn, those things actually, you see how they relate to people. And that's what I want to pound on you, the importance of teaching by example. So we look at Grandpa and why the ice cream. And we're looking at Grandpa, why the ice cream. I'm going to tell a little story about Grandpa. So Grandpa had a son. His name was Uriah. And Uriah, he was a man, was pretty ambitious, and he decided he would go. He didn't like what Dad was always telling him to do, so he went away from home. But one day, he was out in Worcester, and he had some friends out there in Worcester, and the friends told him, "Hey, we'd like you to come and go along with us. We'd like to go harass the Amish. We'd like to harass the Amish." And he said, "Nah, I don't really want to do that." But they finally persuaded him. And so he went along. Well, what happened to his dismay, they came down to a couple Amish buggies. So these were a couple youth. These were youth from Worcester, which is a close town up there. And they came to the first Amish buggy. What did they do? They pulled out a gun. And they held it up and said, "Hey, we want all your money." So that was the first buggy. I think they went to the second buggy. This was it, and Uriah was not like that. He didn't want to do that, but he associated himself with these people. So as time went on, I think it was maybe the third buggy. They might have got, if I remember, I don't have exact, but it was maybe like $5 that he received after the third buggy. But this third buggy, they said, "Okay, Uriah, now it's your turn." He was dumbfounded. He said, "Oh, no, he didn't want to do it." Yeah, and actually he did it. Uriah went on and he held the gun. And so he was recognized. By that time, about the cops, they started following after and they caught him. They took him into jail. They handcuffed him in. But here's where Grandpa. Grandpa had told Uriah that, you know, if he would keep doing what he's doing, he's going to end up somewhere he doesn't want to be. But as time went on, So Grandpa heard about it. Sheriff came over and told him what had happened. And Grandpa got in the buggy and went to Millersburg, went down to the jail. On the way down to jail, he stopped in and he got a half gallon of ice cream. Now to us, maybe ice cream is not as important anymore, maybe to some of us. But he stopped in and got some ice cream. And in this conversation, He talked with Uriah and he talked with him and not one time did he say, "Well, look, see what happened, what I told you, that's exactly what happened." But he had the ice cream, they had their conversation, and they had their conversation, and Grandpa, they had a good conversation, they went back home. The point is, so we look at the examples. I think I'm gonna keep on going here. So why the ice cream? And if we look at why the ice cream, the reason is, through this whole episode, do we see crucial conversations can be done effectively with few words? So I'd like to say a little bit about Uriah. So Uriah ended up becoming That night, Uriah was convicted because of that ice cream, the time that he had spent. It wasn't because of a lot of words, but if you remember back about love must be the motivating force. So the way Grandpa represented himself going into Uriah knew that he actually loved him, and it convicted him, and it actually made him, he actually found Christ in that, through that. Was that a crucial conversation that actually he had with his son that did wrong? How could it look worse but that he went in and he actually sat down and talked with him? So what I want to point out is so that the huge thing is how we respond and what we actually do has a big impact of how that conversation is going to, how that conversation is going to turn out. It left a huge impression. Uriah went on, actually, and he started a church in Paraguay. And that church in Paraguay, I believe, is still going. So he has family there. So what he actually happened there, it made a big impact. Made a big impact on what happened. So does that make sense? Does it make sense the difference it makes when we go into a crucial conversation? Huge difference. So maybe we'll go on with the next one. We'll go on with Dad. Okay, we'll go on with Dad's. So now we have Grandpa. So what my point is, we have Grandpa. Now we have Dad. Dad, why the ice cream? We go on. Do we see crucial conversations can be done effectively with few words if there is love expressed by action? So that's one example. Let's go to the next example. There was a guy by the name of Red Thomas. So the second person is Red Thomas. Red Thomas, they didn't call him Red Thomas for nothing. When he got upset, he was actually a timber buyer, and he was known to live to take, not live to give. So one day, Dad knew about this. He was a timber buyer, and Dad knew kind of how he was. And he stopped in, and he asked Dad, he said, he had a fence he wanted built and some cabinets maybe he wanted to replace. And so Dad was being proactive, I would say. I would call it proactive. We'll go on to that. A proactive dad, courage to have those crucial conversations before entering into agreements will pay dividends. So do we get that? When we're making contracts or we start something and you know there's going to be something maybe a little fishy, or we could say something's going to be a little rough, what are we going to do something about it, or we just kind of keep on going? We just build more inventory. We just keep building more inventory like was brought out. Or are we actually going to do something about it? And so Dad asked him a question. And Dad decided to be transparent. And he looked down and he thought about it a little bit, and he asked Mr. Thomas, he asked him, he said, I've heard in the past that you might have not paid all those who did services for you. That he had heard that before. Dad was a humble man. I might maybe go back a little bit and just talk about Dad just a little bit. So Dad was excommunicated. They had voted 5 times in the church and weren't agreed 1 time. And then finally they said, whoever agrees with them, and it was about tobacco and bed courtship. And they said, finally, whoever's not agreed with him, they're all excommunicated. So Dad, in his life, he showed by example the humility, and he would forgive people. He would forgive people, and he wouldn't hold it against them. But Dad, in this instance, again, I have never in my life, in the 7 years I had worked with Dad, I've never seen a situation where he didn't, or he was able to come through a conversation where a person was still upset or mad at him. And those were things that, and I think a huge thing is humility. And we might go into a little bit more of that. But Dad was transparent. And so Mr. Thomas, of course, when Dad said this, he's kind of got red in the face. And he said, Levi, I'm going to tell you what. Every night that you work here at my place, I will pay you. Every night. And so Dad said, okay, that's fine. We'll do that. And I remember going with every night. I remember Mr. Thomas coming out. He'd get out his wallet, and he'd pull the Benjamin Franklins out. He'd pay us up. And so this went on. I think we worked there for 3 days. And after the third day, I remember coming back home and the car stopped. We got out and he pulled out all his money and he had paid up. And he said, this is what he said. And he said, now, Levi, he leaned over on the next seat and he said, now, I want to tell you something. I want you to get on your Amish bullhorn. I want you to tell everyone in Amish country that Red Thomas paid, and Red Thomas paid in full. And so he was serious about it. But so the beauty out of the thing is actually Dad, in later years, we did some more work for Mr. Thomas, and we never had a problem. But I think it's because being proactive and going to those crucial conversations. Don't be afraid to go into those crucial conversations. Make it intentional. Because if you don't, if I would have liked to had a balloon here and I would have probably put air in it. It's kind of like that. You put air in a balloon, you put air in a balloon, air in a balloon, and finally it will pop. And you're just going to have a lot more to carry, a lot more to pick up and carry along. So those are two of them. So those are things that I want to instill in you. You are actually painting a picture. You can make it easier for the next generation by actually showing others how to do these crucial conversations. Being intentional and going into those. So maybe the next one. So of course I have a roofing business. Do a lot of roofing, and as a young man, we look at the next page here. It says the thunder rolls. So why did the thunder roll? Well, I was a roofer, and so working on roofs. So of course you tear your roof off and you install felt paper. And what I didn't know is that one of the nights, so back then we would have used just, felt paper, not synthetics or ice guard and things. One of the guys had stepped through that felt paper in a valley. So what happened, I got a serious call. I was at home. I was watching it rain, and it was later at night, just about dark. And all at once, the phone rang, and it was pouring something fierce. And the phone rang. And you know how those summer downpours, the thunder rolls, and you had all this water. And I had a phone call, and somebody was not very happy. His name was Louis Smith. And he told me that he had water pouring down his house, and I better get there very quickly. And so, of course, I didn't drive. I had to call a driver, and got a driver, and away we went. When I got down there, to make matters worse, there he sat. I looked at, went into the house. I seen the water coming down. There he sat holding his shoulder. And in the meantime, while he had went up to the roof, and he had tried to put a tarp up over that roof, and he had slipped, and he had fell, and he broke his arm. So can you imagine how irate? Here you have water coming down your house. Now he's got a broken arm. And here I faced it, and I was like, I assured him. I said, well, we'll do everything we can. And he asked, so do you have insurance? And I said, I have liability insurance. We had to have liability to be able to work for some companies. So we talked about that, and I told him that I would do everything I could to make this right for him. And it seemed to soften up a little bit, and I went home. So I should maybe say, so this was the second year, I think 2003, I had been in business for 2 years now. And, I didn't have enough money to just come out with the money to pay for all this house. The picture looked pretty big. So what was I going to do about it? But there were some things that, so we talked about it. We could go on here. Maybe that one of the lessons in this thing is when under pressure, in crucial conversations, it helps sometimes to put the ball in their court. And what I'm saying in this conversation, as I had with him, so we talked later, and we decided that we would see what the insurance company would say. And so the insurance company said that I came out immediately as fast as I could, and I was there like 45 minutes later, and he went up under his own power. And he put that tarp on. So they said it was his fault and that they weren't going to give him any money. So we got together and I told him that. And I said, that's what they said. But I said, this is one thing that I think. I said, this is the way I look at it. I said, Christ, he gave everything for me. Christ didn't owe one thing when he died on that cross for me, nothing. He didn't owe me anything, but so this is what I'm going to do. This was, I think, on a Friday. I asked him if he would wait, so I'll maybe backpedal a little bit. So about money-wise, he wanted $10,000 to cover that at first. But then later, he said he actually needed paid for the doctor. He also needed to be paid for compensation off of work. And I think the price went up to $16,000. Well, for me, that was like a big amount. I didn't have $16,000 to give to him. What was I going to do? And so I asked him that night again about Christ. He said, Christ didn't owe anything. I don't think I owe you anything according to the legally, but this is what we'll do. He said, by Monday, you decide. You decide what I actually owe you. You make the decision what I owe you. And of course that, you know, I had some sleepless nights, but the next Monday, he called me back and he said he would be okay with $10,000. And I said, okay. I said, would you be okay with payments? And he said, yes. And so we actually settled that I went ahead and I made payments with that. And what I'd like to bring out, so it won't always work out that way, but through this man, I was able to actually go do more jobs. So I got a lot of referrals. The best man that I had doing referrals, giving referrals, I'm talking about another customer. He worked for a power plant that everybody made over $100,000. That was back in 2000. And there was a big pool of clients through that conversation, doing it as my dad had taught us. Basically, so we live to give. It's not live to take. And that'll make the difference. They will see in the way you carry yourself. They'll see, and it will make a difference. And you'll be able to reach out for God's kingdom like you won't if you would. That evening, you would have called a lawyer and you would have asked him to get the paperwork done to see what you could do. And so I want to encourage that there's a power in that, in just simply giving some things up. There's a verse down there below. It says, heaping coals of fire. And I think in every application, that applies in business. And I would say that, you know, our business, God's kingdom is built more in the 6 days a week than in the seventh day. So does it make a difference? I think it does. Sometimes asking questions, I might go on with that. How important actually is to ask questions in crucial conversations? We look at, do ingredients make a difference? A lot of us have wives that make fabulous pecan pies. And when she makes a pecan pie, she usually would go for a pecan pie. I'm going to put a couple of these up here because I think we need to move on. But when she makes a pecan pie, she uses a recipe. And if she uses the same recipe, she'll come up with a consistent, good pie. And if she doesn't use the right recipe, I'm sure your children, if they eat something they don't like, you know, they like Lucky Charms, and you might come out with cornflakes or something, and they're like, yuck. Well, that's how it works. Like when we talk about it, going into crucial conversations, if you have the right ingredients, we look at the left side, we have resentful, quick to answer, accusing them, and a better than thou. We look at the right side, you have a loving that person, patient, asking questions, and humility. So would we say that actually, does that make a difference? Does it make a difference what we are? Better than thou, we accuse them, we go through all, do all those things. It makes a huge difference what the ingredients we put in there. So we could say, so what happens when you approach someone quickly? You approach someone quickly, you don't really like him, you accuse him quickly, he barely has time to even share his side of the story, and you show him who his boss. Do you think it'll work? Do you think it'll work to use that attitude? I don't think it will. So I think one of the things, if you're writing things down, another huge important thing, I believe is, here we go. Let's see if we missed one here. Why not ask questions in crucial conversations? And I liked it. So part of that was questions. So instead of accusing someone, we're actually asking them a question. And it actually makes them think. It makes them think about things. Have you ever heard recently? So I don't know how you have with employees, but sometimes we have employees that might be on the phone quite a while. So how do we reflect on that? How do we actually approach something like that? And so the one day we were out there and I asked him, I said, so, and just in a way I asked him, so how much is that person paying you on the other side of the line? Well, so he didn't really say too much. And we talked about it later. But, you know, we don't have to accuse somebody and just tell them, you know, yell at him, get off the phone, but ask them questions. It makes them actually think that actually what they're doing is actually robbing the boss of his time. And you know, I'm okay if somebody's on the phone and it's important they ask. But if you're just going to be on the phone, just so we need to, again, be proactive and talk about those things. It might be your son that's working for you that you need to make that conversation. Story that I'd like to share. So why not ask crucial conversations? Jesus did. A lot of times Jesus asked questions. I think we heard this morning about the Good Samaritan or about that application where the priest and the Levite went through there. And so the question was, who is his neighbor? Well, after they went through, and the Good Samaritan actually was the one Jesus asked. So asked the lawyer, said, who do you think was his neighbor? And he said, of course, the Samaritan. So he saw through that. Jesus asked a lot of questions. He did that. He did a lot of those. So, it's pretty important. So there's one more story before we go on. When we're going in a situation when you might have someone that's working for you and you'd want to fire him. There was a certain person that was working for me and every morning, we would sit there waiting. He was late every morning. And so how do you deal with that? So I told him that, you know, he needed to try to be there earlier. And I told him how much it actually meant. Each person that's sitting there at home is actually losing money because they're not working. They're working by the hour and they're actually not being able to work. And so I asked him, I told him about that. So I asked him, so what would he, if he would thought it would be okay if I would charge him $2.50 a minute when he's late? If I'm too harsh with that. If I charge you $2.50 a minute when you're late, and he said, yeah, he thinks that's okay. So if you do the math, you're 30 minutes late. That's about maybe, what, 70? We're close to $70. Well, that went on for a little time. That didn't work. So after that, I asked him again, took him aside and said, what about, are you okay? Am I being too unreasonable? $4.25 a minute. And the result was, one of the paychecks, he barely got any money. I think he might have had $200 left on a two-week period. And literally, seriously, he actually fired himself. But what I want to say about this situation is actually we're good friends. Just about 6 months ago, he works for a crane, so actually bought his own crane, and he was on time actually this time. I don't know how that all works, but what I'm getting at is the relationships are still important. Depending how you relate to something, sometimes you have to say, okay, this is it, because you're affecting other people. But always remember that there's somebody else on the other end living to give, and the relationship that we still have is valuable. And so those are some ways that you can deal with crucial conversations. You can deal with those, but asking questions. So if I would have just did that automatically at the end of the week and not said anything to him, not had that conversation, it wouldn't have worked. But we had that conversation, and it made it work. So here's a little... just to keep going, Surgeon General's warning. How many of us we've seen that on advertisements. They're usually on cigarettes where you see someone smoking. They cause cancer. Well, I would say this probably When the stakes are high, texting or emails can be hazardous to crucial conversations. I'd like to encourage you, and you know, there's times when emails and texts, a quick reply is maybe good. But when you're getting down to the nitty-gritty, and like talking to that guy, that gentleman, where I had got that water in the house, it makes a huge difference if you actually value that person and you go down and you sit down with him and talk. Is that in a business relationship, or for us, that, you know, if some are deacons or ministers, being able to do that, just be willing to go down, sit down, and talk. Don't just text. I've seen times before where that has made a mess. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, we might say things when we do it, when we text, just because it's just a font. But if somebody, if you're actually in front of them, you might say things when you're texting that you wouldn't when you're face-to-face. So I'd like to just put that in there. Be careful with that. Be very careful with texting and not taking the time to actually go face-to-face. I think that's a powerful thing. Okay, we'll move on to managing ourselves. Again, who is that person sitting in your chair? We're thinking about that, and we might see, you know, we sometimes as leaders are as a car racing down the highway. And, you know, there's a story that goes about a man and his boy. They were racing down the highway. The boy had his daughter. His wife and daughter with him. Even they were flying down the road, a freeway, had faulty tires on it. We as businessmen are sometimes like that. We just accelerate and we press on the gas to maintain success and to accelerate. And we barely know how to slow down, pull back, and face challenges at a healthy pace. It's just, we're just so about, sometimes we just, you know, how can we slow this thing down? And so how do we manage ourselves? So you can manage, you can't change others, but I can tell you, we can change ourselves. And most of us think about changing the world, but few of us think about changing ourselves. Many of us think about changing the world, but few of us think about changing ourselves. And sometimes, you know, I know in my life, it takes something sometimes to get us to think and actually to keep moving. And so I know in my life, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I fell on a roof, and it took me, I was life flighted, and it took me about 3 months. I thought I was perfect. I was in good shape. If you'd ask my wife, she'd say, well, he wasn't quite. I thought I was normal, but no. And when I'm thinking about these things, you know, we need to be able to admit our wrongs. And I can maybe ask the question, so when's the last time that you admitted you were wrong? Us as leaders, do we ever admit we're wrong? And we can say, you know, it's hard, and I think it's in your workbook. It says it's hard to admit you're wrong when you're never wrong. Do you get that? Because we're always usually right. And I think that's a powerful thing. When we're going into that conversation, when we represent that better than thou instead of humility, we will probably fail. And I think I know for myself, one thing I learned on that fall was actually just simply admitting when you're wrong. Maybe you're somewhat right, but don't force it. Just don't push it. Don't be pushy. Just, it's okay. It's okay if you're right. If you're right and the other person thinks you're wrong, but just be willing to be humble. Slow down, and yeah, let's be proactive. Let's do things ahead of time. So, being proactive versus reactive. We talked about that a little bit. I don't think I need to talk much about that. So again, have conversations about questionable situations as soon as they arise. And there might be a little, I'll just give you a little illustration. So in roofing industry, we always have to deal with those people, these insurance companies. And I have a company, there's a big company that takes care of Starbucks and Bob Evans, and they do a lot of work for them. We work for their company. And they had a big project where they had insurance. So there was a big insurance, they had a lot of insurance paid for a project, but they wanted me to be able to submit two quotes, and they wanted one quote they wanted me to submit with hail damage, and the other one, that one was supposed to be high, another one is lower. And what I'm getting at is if you go into those situations and you give in, if you're not proactive and you give in once, the next time they'll go back to that and say, well, you did that time. And just be very proactive about it. If somebody tries to do something dishonest or just a little shady, just don't do it. Just talk about it. Talk about it right on the surface. Don't let it go there. Just be very careful with that, being proactive. So as we look at, we heard a little bit about raising the standard. And I'm thinking about teachers. And I'm thinking about the people, all you sitting here. When you're going home, who are the teachers? Who's going to learn? Like Grandpa, the way Grandpa taught and Dad taught. So who's going to learn? I think teaching by example is a powerful thing. And sometimes, my heart, it just kind of cries out. And I'm like, where are the examples? Where are the examples today? I think youth are looking for examples. How can we be proactive? How can we actually show them? And I think that has simply to do with your lives. The way you relate to those crucial conversations. Is it in church? Is it with your employee? Is it with your wife? Children will see that. Those are crucial conversations. And so I could say probably there's many of you here, that probably have boys at home that are watching you. I have boys at home that are watching. They catch on really quick. And I'd just like to encourage you when we're doing things, those boys are wanting examples. And so we look at that. Today is the day of opportunity. We have one shot. Today is the day of opportunity. We will never relive the past. And actually, life comes with a lot of things, but there's no reverse. Life comes with a lot of things, but no reverse. You can't go back and do it over. And so I'd like to encourage you, us as dads, as leaders, to make a powerful impact on those around you. And the other thing, don't forget, live to give. Those three words, when you're going into a conversation with someone, think about what that person is actually going through. Maybe there's something on their end why they didn't pay you. But being able to go through those crucial conversations and being intentional, very important. Live to give. Don't forget those three words. And don't forget the ice cream. Don't forget the reason for the ice cream. Those are the little things. You can go through a crucial conversation sometimes with very few words if you have that love flowing from you. Maybe last, I'd like to leave with you. There's a verse in Proverbs 13:22. It says, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. And I'm talking about not just money, but I'm talking about a legacy. Each one of us here have that opportunity again to make that legacy. And I'm not talking about yourself. I'm talking about that legacy for Jesus Christ. Making that legacy and building God's kingdom through our lives. As we go out here, there's many lives that are going to be touched in one way or the other. And so I'd like to leave with that with you. And may God bless all of you for your endeavors as you follow him. Just blessings to you all. Thanks for being attentive.